You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
It really kind of bothered me. I mean, this latest COVID relief package, there's a provision in it, and it's fair to call it controversial because essentially prohibits states from enacting their own tax relief if they spend any of this federal money. It's confusing. It is. And I think it's fair to say this is a classic example of federal government overreach, right? Overstepping its authority. At least a lot of states think that way. There's a bipartisan suit out there. We're going to talk about that today as Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson is going to join us. A bit later on, too, you look at all these relief packages. Man, we got to unpack the business end of COVID-19 relief here with Brett Donnelly a bit later today on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thank you, Eric Young, almost Nubius in studio engineer. We got Eric now filling in. He's the most excellent studio engineer in training as Josh Rath, still around. Okay, Josh will check in every now and again, but Eric Young, thank you. Appreciate that.
Hey, thank you.
And you can trust me that I'm not going to make it easy on him, right? I'm going to call it torturously fun. I looked it up. That's actually a phrase, okay? And it's something that I'm going to implore here frequently. I do anyway. What the heck? We're Montanans. We know how to dish it out. We know how to take it, too. Those go hand in hand. Thank you so much for being here from Montana for Montana, the Voices of Montana. That's 22 years. That's two decades. And thank you again for being a part, making us a part of your Montana mornings. And, of course, you being a part here as well. So just a couple of things to hit today as we look at this COVID-19 relief package. I know we've talked about it in various different ways. One of the ways that we really haven't hit a ton on, because it's confusing, as we talked with our state legislators about, how are they going to enact tax relief? How are they going to spend this COVID-19 relief funds? The most recent package. Now, there have been three big packages that have come out. Last May, it was $3 trillion. In December, it was almost $1 trillion, $900 billion. And these are large amounts of money, okay? Don't be fooled by the 1.9. That's a trillion, okay? And $1 trillion is 600 miles high of stacked $100 bills. That is just a ton of money, okay? But look, we've talked to you got to spend it here because if we don't, other states can take it. They're going to grab it. That's part of it. Later on, Brett Donnelly is going to join us, SBA director, district director for Montana, to kind of unpack this business end of the relief fund here. But there have been some things that are confusing. Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson has got a suit out there to kind of pull back the federal government because they're overstepping, in my opinion, their authority by this provision in COVID-19 relief, the latest here, that prohibits states from enacting their own tax relief. And A.G. Knutson joins us now. Good morning, Austin. How you doing, sir?
I'm great, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm good. I thank you for being here. I was up in your, homeland, neck of the woods, not too long ago. Realized how dry it is, the fires. I mean, it's we're getting some promise. There's a little rain here in southwestern Montana. South Dakota's really dry. It's getting some moisture. But have you been back to the farm in Culbertson?
We're actually headed back here. My wife's headed home here in a day or two to wrap up some business of ours up there. I don't know when I'm going to make it up there next, but, I've talked to several of my neighbors up there, and, yeah, it's bone dry. It's a little scary right now. If you got guys looking to put seed in the ground and get to farming, they definitely need the moisture up there. But, look, we had a big fire just outside of Poplar. They had to close Highway 2 a few days ago. Yep. It's dry.
Yeah. We're concerned. Our prayers are out there, but I know in talking to some of the ag folks around here, the calving season's going real well, and now there's planting. I mean, they don't mind the nice weather for it, but we're hoping we get some rain. Hey, thank you again for being here. Let's talk right off about this federal government, these provisions in this latest COVID-19 relief package that prohibit states from enacting their own tax relief. And as I've talked with legislators about it and other public officials, the problem is even the federal government doesn't know exactly what it is they passed in that package.
This is the classic federal moving target.
It is.
And you hit the nail on the head. They passed this gigantic stimulus package or COVID relief package or whatever you want to call it, using really what's imaginary numbers. You give a great example and an illustration of what $1 trillion in hundreds stacked would look like. And it's just an astronomical fantasy number, frankly.
Yeah.
But they throw these money at this money at these states. They say, here's some relief. Hurry up, let's get it out. And then they give very little guidance on it. And they say, well, the guidance is coming. Stay tuned. Here, do something with this money. Oh, but don't use it for anything constructive. Don't give tax relief to your citizens. Really, Tom, what they're telling us here in Montana is that we have to grow government with this money. That's really what this boils down to. We can't use it to offset any tax relief. We have to use this to grow government. I've got a real problem with that. I know a lot of Montanans have a problem with that. Our legislature's got a problem with that. Governor Gianforte's got a problem with that. And this is why we're pushing back on this.
And talk about how you're pushing back. Now, I know that a lot of members, federal level, state level, had tried to get U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen to confirm exactly what this legislation means and to actually kind of step back in policy, but she didn't. She refused to. So you've joined, and this is a bipartisan lawsuit. You're going to force the issue here, right?
It is. Myself and several other Republican state attorney generals, we sent a letter to Treasury Secretary Yellen a few weeks ago asking for some clarification, like you just said, and she wouldn't give it. Surprise, surprise. You know, former head of the Federal Reserve Board, and, you know, she's a diehard Keynesian liberal. She waffled a little bit, but really we didn't get any kind of clear indication here. Similarly, you know, we've been asking Senator Tester, you know, he's moving up in the ranks, good friend of the Senate Majority Leader Schumer. Hey, John, help us out here. You send us all this money. What can we do with it? He slaps on more restrictions on us. It makes it tougher for us to do anything really constructive with this money at the legislative level. So at that point, again, myself and several other colleagues in the Attorney General's ranks, we filed suit. We sued the Biden administration, saying that this is an overreach of federal authority, like you said, that this is nothing more than the federal government holding our state hostage, throwing money at us and telling us that we have to grow government.
This suit then, and I very much appreciate that, because that's how I feel, that we're being held hostage here. We have to spend this money or else other folks will grab it. And I know the common sense, or I know the nonsensical sense behind that. The lawsuit in itself, Austin, if the Treasury Secretary then pulls back on policy, this law is still enacted. I don't know that satisfies the what you guys are trying to accomplish here in trying to pull back the federal government from an overextension of their authority. Can you explain that conflict in my mind anyway, whether we're just going to try to get this issue settled or we're going to look at the heart of this and say the federal government cannot tell the states what their tax policy can be?
Well, this comes down to the 10th Amendment. I mean, any powers that are not specifically given to the federal government are reserved to the states. And taxation and tax policy is one of those. That's not a specifically enumerated power within the Constitution. Of course, the federal government is given taxation power. That's true. But what they're not given power to do under the U.S. Constitution is to send out funds like this and then say, okay, you can't use this to set your own tax policy. That's really the fundamental part here. Now, I don't think we're going to get any kind of quick resolution here, Thomas.
No.
Just, you know, all cards on the table. I think this is going to be drawn out. I think this is going to look different in 50 different states, because you've got 50 different legislatures all doing the same thing with this money, looking at it going, well, what can we do with it? We've got so little guidance, and this was so poorly thought out and so rushed at the federal level to look like we're doing something for COVID, that there's very little guidance here. And so, of course, when you've got a legislature like ours that meets for 90 days every other year, and the session's in right now, And it's getting close to wrapping up. I mean, there's only about a month of time left for the Montana legislature to deal with this money. And when you're talking about a couple of billion dollars that just got dumped into our process, that's an incredibly daunting project for these legislatures, or excuse me, legislators who are only here for another 30 days, you know, until 2023.
Yeah.
So we've got to act quickly. This is putting our legislature in a very, very difficult spot. I'm incredibly disappointed with Senator Tester and frankly, his leadership out of the Senate, or lack of leadership. This has just really put all of these states in a tremendously difficult position where we really didn't have a choice but to sue.
So they pass a vague provision, and then the Treasury Secretary, who's supposed to put policy behind these provisions, says, okay, this is a thorny issue. That's what she says. But the states are going to push back because it may be, as I think the suit says, one of the most egregious power grabs by the federal government in the nation's history. This is an issue that doesn't just get wiped away with a pen or a change of policy, right? Isn't this something that the Supreme Court is going to have to pick up unless they repeal this provision in the law?
I think you've nailed this exactly. Yeah, this is a huge overreach, a huge power grab, and you know, it's just an attempt to hold states hostage and bribe them with huge amounts of fake cash, frankly. I just don't know how else to put it, Tom.
I know.
If you really stop and think about money policy and think about economics, this is about enough to make you sick to your stomach and where you can't sleep at night.
How do you Austin Knudsen is with us, Montana's Attorney General, fifth generation Montanan, as we talked about. Kind of, he grew up on the family farm outside of Culbertson. He and Christy with three children, still a family man there. I want to get to drugs here and methamphetamine and illegal immigration in just a little bit, maybe on the other side of the break, because we got 2 minutes. Let's see if we can wrap this up. I know we can't put a bow on it here. What has been the response to the lawsuit from the Treasury Department? What's the indication about how quick the courts might settle this issue? I know you had said that they may try to drag it on, but what is in your playbook that forces the hand?
Well, right now, you know, I think we try to get in front of a federal judge as quickly as we can on a preliminary injunction. This is one of the cases that I don't myself have the lead on. We've passed this off to a couple other states, and that's the nice thing about having a coalition of Republican AGs is, you know, I can take the lead on a case like Keystone XL or the border stuff, and this one's being handled mostly by West Virginia and a couple of other states. But,
gotcha.
You know, I don't think we're going to have a quick resolution here, like I said. I think this is going to have to go to the Supreme Court, like you said. But this is just so indicative of what's going on with the Biden administration. I mean, we are having to sue them literally almost every week, Tom, over something new, because they're just trying so many new different things, and these are things that have never been tried before. These are things that are clearly outside the Constitution. Joe Biden is not a monarch. You don't get to just make these decisions willy-nilly from the governor from the president's office. A lot of these things have to be done through the Congress, and our national monetary policy is certainly one that we shouldn't just be messing with like this.
Got to take a break. AG Austin Knudsen is with us. We'll stand by and come on back and talk about the southern border emergency situation. We can call it a crisis. I think that's fair. Drugs are coming over the border like never before. How will that affect law enforcement in Montana? We'll talk more about that here in just a bit on Voices of Montana. Got that legislature in session. Austin Knudsen knows a little bit about that. He served House District 34 in 2011. Was elected, then re-elected as Speaker of the House a few years ago. Also a private attorney, too, served as Roosevelt County Attorney from 2018 to 2020. And that's where we'll pick it up here. Austin Knudsen, Montana's Attorney General, as we talk about. Austin, thank you again for being here. One of your campaign promises, and even as Attorney General, you have said one of the main things that's going to be your focus is combating the drug epidemic and supporting law enforcement in Montana. We have talked yesterday. It was with Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton. And before that, we were chatting with Senator Steve Daines as he visited the border here. He talked about the flood of illegal immigration, that it's not only a drug problem, it's an immigration problem. Illegal border crossings, anyway. We'll put it that way. And that's opening the door up to more and more drug trafficking by the Mexican cartels. The Mexican cartels used to just transport drugs up into Montana. Now they're establishing a foothold. And I know that you have fought back on that. There has been an arrest, I think you can talk about, a prosecution. But what happens if they establish a real strong foothold in Montana like they're trying to do? How does that affect law enforcement? How does that affect public safety?
It affects law enforcement and public safety tremendously, Tom, and I appreciate you bringing this up. This truly is, in my opinion, the most dangerous issue facing Montana, and I say that across the board. The Mexican drug cartels are here. We know we've got a huge methamphetamine problem in the state. That's the driver. But, of course, we're seeing more heroin. We're seeing more fentanyl. A lot of the opioids are making a comeback. The pills are still a problem. But methamphetamine really is our main problem here in the state of Montana. And as I've said here in this show before, people need to understand what we're dealing with here. 100% of these drugs are coming from the Mexican cartels. 100%. They are being smuggled across the southern border, and they're up in Montana within a couple of days. They traffic them up here using the highway system. This is not long division. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple stuff. But what's interesting is that you rushed against it. The cartels are getting smart. I mean, these are very sophisticated and becoming more and more vertically integrated business operations. They're looking at revenue. When you've got states like Colorado and Washington and now Montana that have legalized marijuana. Marijuana used to be a huge cash crop for the cartels. Well, that's no longer the case. They're having to diversify. So what are they doing? They're manufacturing large amounts of methamphetamine, smuggling them up here, but they're also smuggling people. And this has become a huge revenue source for the cartels. When we look at the people who are now being let into the country by President Biden, flinging the doors wide open and saying, you know what, we're putting a moratorium on deportations, come on into the country. Most of those people that are coming in are not actually Mexican residents. They're Central American residents that are traveling up here from Honduras, from Guatemala, from a lot of the Central American countries, and they're having to travel through Mexico. Well, guess what? The cartel is making those people pay to come through Mexico and then making them pay again to get them across the border into the U.S. And this is a pretty brilliant business model, because when you've got a president that says, you know what, there's no repercussions for crossing the border, that's guaranteed income for the cartel. They can tell somebody, you know what, it's going to cost you this much money to get across the border, we'll get you across, and c'est la vie. And that's exactly what's happening here. So this is a very interesting business model.
What do you have to direct more resources then in Montana? In order to combat this, because your resources are going to be finite. Everybody's resources are going to be finite. Forget about the fake money. Resources are finite. Have you talked with your law enforcement partners and stakeholders about and I know, and I mentioned with Leo Dutton was on the air, Sheriff Lewis and Clark County. And we talked off the air. He can't say I've seen an increase in drug trafficking directly related to the southern border. We just think it's going to happen. So we don't have any proof on the ground right now. How are you anticipating dealing with this, AG Knutson?
Well, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. We've got a resources problem in Montana. We're a very rural state. We're a very large geographic state with a relatively small population. But I'll put this in terms of the law enforcement that I'm in charge of, right? That's the Highway Patrol.
Yeah.
Montana Highway Patrol is under the Department of Justice, and they work for me. We've got a little over 200 troopers in Montana right now. That's 200 troopers out on the highway. Now, they're not all out there at once. Of course, there's different shifts. There's day shift, there's night shift, and they're spread out. And a lot of the times, a lot of these troopers, they don't have partners. They're out, they might be down in Weibo County. They might be up in Roosevelt County by themselves, covering huge portions of highway by themselves. When you're talking about trying to stem the flow of illegal drugs being trafficked into the state, it isn't like we can just put a trooper at every highway entrance in the state of Montana and stop every car coming in. We don't have the power to do that. I don't have the legal ability to do that. And even if I did, we don't have the resources and manpower to do it. So we're having to rely on the highway patrol. We're having to rely on local sheriff departments, which have the same manpower problems that any agency has in the state of Montana. This is absolutely an issue, and the numbers bear this out, Tom. Border crime control stats in Montana, from 2013 to 2019, violent crime in Montana has gone up almost 50%, almost by half. That's staggering. We look at Billings, where you're broadcasting from. 88% increase in violent crime in Billings. Billings is a beautiful city. It's one of my favorite places in the world, but you know it's gotten to where we've got a bad meth problem, and everyone knows it. Crime is up drastically, and again, Billings PD, Chief St. John, he's doing his best, but it's a resource problem, and this is what we're getting with these cartels. And when we're going to start allowing more and more people, cartel affiliates. And that's what concerns me, Tom. When you've got people that are being smuggled into the country by the Mexican cartels, these people who maybe can't pay, they're now beholden to the cartels.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What are they bringing with them into the U.S.?
You know, I've got to interrupt you here because I want to save a few minutes, and thank you for that. I appreciate that. I know it's an issue we'll continue to talk about. I got a headline break here, and I want to save 3 minutes to talk about this. Might be a little more on the fun side. You guys made a move there to clear a driver education backlog. I'm seeing student drivers on the road, and I'm it's always sort of a rite of passage, a rite of spring. So we'll come on back after these headlines from Brian Bennett. All right, as much time as we can spare, Austin Knutson is with us here. A heartbreak at 9:35. There are an estimated 22,000 Montana students waiting to enroll in driver's education. I tongue-in-cheek say with a hint of truth, Austin, that this is a public safety issue. You're addressing it. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. Look, this is a fun one. This is one where we really rolled up our sleeves and found a place where we could reduce some bureaucracy. COVID-19 hit. And, you know, driver's training stopped. We couldn't get teachers to actually take students and want to do in-person training. That was kind of the old rite of passage where you had to go in and sit in a class and get X number of hours in the classroom. COVID really threw a monkey wrench into that, as it did with a lot of MVD services. So we were looking at this with the legislature. Do we need to change a law? What can we do? Because we had just this huge bottleneck of young students that were wanting to get driver's training and they weren't able to. So what could we do about it? Well, we got to looking at the laws and looking at our statutes, and we figured out with an MVD that we could do this internally without a law. We had the authority to do this inside.
Okay.
So what we've done here is we've set up a temporary program where a 15-year-old can study for the driver's training written exam, and they can study online, study from home. They can take the written portion of the exam online. Once they get that and pass that, we'll give them their learner's permit, which says they have to complete 50 hours of partner driving with an adult, with a parent, including 10 hours of nighttime driving, just to train up and learn how to do this. And once they've completed that, they can come in to MVD. They can take their actual physical driving exam with a driver's examiner. And if they pass, they get their graduated learner's permit, just like we do now. And that limits the number of passengers they can have in the car. But look, this is a way that we identified at that MVD that we can help Montana families. You know, I grew up a farm and ranch kid. I know what it means to have another driver's license on the farm.
Yeah.
Someone to help move equipment, someone to help drive truck, whatever the case might be. And this is just one way we can help out.
Thank you for solving the issue, or helping out, as you say. Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson. Out of time here, Austin. I appreciate your time here. I know you guys are busy. You're working hard. I appreciate the work you're doing in the public service. Be well, okay? And I know you take some time for your family, but do something fun out there, okay?
Will do. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate
all right. It. Back with more in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483. And join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
Looking forward to being in Lewistown a week from today, Great Falls a week from tomorrow, and then Helena on April 15th for the Tow Rope Tour. Go to northernbroadcasting.com. Still looking for your tow rope heroes. In Montana, we don't leave folks stranded along the side of the road. We carry a tow rope, and that tow rope can come in many forms. Who has extended a tow rope to you, or somebody you know that deserves some recognition? Go to northernbroadcasting.com and help us out, and we'll recognize them during our tow rope tour. Tom Schultz back here at Voices of Montana. It's from Montana, for Montana. If you're a business owner in Montana, you may have been helped, or maybe you've looked into the various programs that were enacted to provide pandemic fallout relief. It might be confusing to know which program and which program iteration that you're dealing with, because we had $3 trillion passed in May in 2020, then $900 billion in December. We talked about this earlier. Those are big numbers, $1.9 trillion in March. And we need to get up to speed on how that affects what's available to you. Brent Donnelly joins us now, Montana's SBA District Director for the state. And Brent, good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there. I'm getting a little bit of moisture here in southwestern Montana. I know you live in sort of in the Three Forks area. You getting any rain over there?
No, but I tell you what, the weekend was unbelievably beautiful here.
I know it.
Wow. It didn't start raining yesterday until I took my son to baseball practice.
Well, there you go. That's what we need to do. We need to all go out there, wash our cars, wash our windows, tempt the rain, because we need some. Hey, thanks for being here. One thing that I think is kind of confusing is we've got these three different packages of COVID relief funds, but don't they all feed kind of into the same handful of relief programs for businesses?
Yeah, at least as it pertains to the small business piece, you know, this started a year ago with the CARES Act. And then as you said in your introduction, we've had all these sort of iterations and changes and updates and additions to all these programs. And so they kind of continue to funnel down through here. And these programs have changed, too, you know, over the course of the last year. And so at this point, there's a lot, and it can be kind of confusing. So hopefully I can help sort a little bit of that out for y'all today.
Well, let's start with the ease. Well, and before, I've got this request to ask you, what businesses qualify? Because I was speaking to a business owner who's new in his business, but it's a legitimate business, and he was looking into this, and he felt like because he's not been around for a year, he doesn't qualify. But what businesses do qualify for any number of these programs?
Yeah, so for the most part, and there's a lot of different definitions, but for the most part, businesses needed to be in business at the start of the pandemic, which for most programs is the date of either January 31st, 2020 or February 15th of 2020. So generally speaking, if you just started your business last week, you may not be eligible.
Okay.
However, I don't have a lot of information. I wanted to make mention of this restaurant revitalization fund that came out of this most recent package. And the guidance isn't up yet, but we were on a little preview training yesterday, and they made mention that perhaps for that program, there's going to be that might be a little bit different for the restaurant businesses that started during the pandemic, that they may still be able to to access that program. So we'll see what the details look like when they come out on that, but that might be the one exception to that. Outside of that, generally speaking, it's small businesses, which are, you know, over 99% of the businesses here in Montana are considered small, according to the Small Business Administration definition. And so there was a 500-employee threshold for the first draw PPP loans, and then that's dropped to 300-employee threshold for the second draw PPP loans. But, you know, most businesses in Montana are going to be eligible to apply for some of these programs, and even some nonprofits now as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one of those iterations that came with that program. Just launch into what you think people ought to know with where we're at right now. The PPP program has been extended. The EIDL program, the maximum loan amount, has been increased there. Kind of get us up to speed on where we're at right now.
Yeah, so the EIDL program is probably the big news of the day, but let me mention PPP first. So the PPP program, Paycheck Protection Program, I've talked with you and many others about that program over the course of the last year, and I think the main thing that businesses should know about that is the expiration date on that program was March 31st. It's been extended for 2 months till the end of May.
Okay.
And so businesses can still apply for those funds. And, you know, Tom, so during 2020, the first round of that, we did about 24,000 of those PPP loans in Montana for about $1.8 billion. And I was curious, you know, how many folks are going to still need to go back and access that program again in the new version of it. The number's just out now. We're up to about another 19,000 PPP loans in Montana. Wow. For another $732 million. So, you know, it's interesting. I think I want folks to know that it struck home to me again over the weekend, talking to a guy that I know. I've been talking to him about different things. He's in the community, you know, community member, parent of the kids' friends and stuff like that. He knows what I do. And we've talked about COVID and PPP and EIDL and small businesses. And he came to me over the weekend and says, "Hey, what about that PPP program? Is that legitimate? Is that a real thing?" I'm like, yeah, it's a real thing. And you know, I think that's a case of somebody that early on in the pandemic, you know, we never thought it was going to last this long and really didn't feel like he needed to access these programs. And here we are a year later, and he's going, okay, you know, maybe I still do need to. Let me check that out. And so I think there's some folks out there that might be in that category. And if you are one of those, you can still apply for the PPP loan.
And that's the one that 75% is forgivable if that 75% it goes to maintain employee wages. Is that correct?
Not quite. It's actually 100% forgivable.
Okay.
As long as you use at least 60% of the funds for payroll costs.
All right. Those
and
are,
then yeah. So you were right, though. That was one of the iterations. Early on, it was 75%. It dropped down to 60%. So another example there.
Yeah.
I think another example there, too, of PPP, just to take another minute, is the formulas for certain borrowers on calculating loan amounts changed as well. And so if you happen to be in that bucket where you went to your bank, they said, okay, you know, you can qualify for X loan amount, or maybe that number might even been zero for some people. You might go check back if you still have a need, because for certain borrowers, that formula has changed a little bit. So you may be able to do a new calculation and see if you could qualify for some PPP funds.
Brent Donnelly is with us, Montana District Director for the SBA. So the extension for the PPP has grown by 2 months. What about the deadline for utilizing those funds?
So you can have a what they call a covered period of anywhere between 8 and 24 weeks, and each business is able to select that.
Okay.
So you work with your bank, and that's the details. But, yeah, if you're a business and you think you have a need for additional PPP funds, or maybe you haven't taken PPP and you want to, this is a good time over the next 2 months to go talk to your bank, and sooner than later. The deadline for submitting application is May 31st. And then there's another 30 days after that for processing time. So that's it on PPP. We've talked about that a ton over the last year. I think one of the big news items of the day from our perspective is the increase to the economic injury disaster loan amount. And I think that's going to have some significant impacts on some of our Montana businesses. Turn back the clock a year ago, the Economic Injury Disaster Program was used to help businesses and communities impacted by natural disasters, right? Like floods and tornadoes and hurricanes and things like that. Congress made this program available for use as a result of the pandemic, and not just in particular communities or geographic areas, but nationally. And the program first was touted, so a loan amount of up to $2 million, interest rate 3.75% for for-profits and 2.75% for nonprofits. But then there was a huge demand for this loan, and so the SBA ended up dropping the maximum loan amount in order to distribute those funds a little bit more evenly.
I see.
Down to $150,000. Okay, $150,000. So for a lot of businesses, $150,000 was great. It was calculated off 6 months of economic injury, and that seemed to work, you know, early on in the pandemic when we thought it was, again, going to be a little bit shorter than it is. But for some businesses, $150,000, you know, wasn't all that impactful. And so starting today, the SBA has now increased that maximum loan amount up to $500,000. So it's over three times what it was. And so what that means is for those businesses that already took a smaller economic injury loan, they can now go back and request more. Or those businesses that haven't applied for the EIDL program, they still can. And they can still apply for that program through the end of this year, through the end of December. The applications are open for that. So on top of that, for that program, I think, you know, significance-wise, not only is the loan amount increased, but all of those loans that were made last year came with a 12-month deferral. They've kicked that out now to 24 months. So any EIDL loan made in 2020 has got a 24-month payment deferral. And any EIDL loan made in 2021, so new loans made now, come with an 18-month deferral. And they're calculated not on 6 months of economic injury, but 24 months of economic injury. So, you know, I think they work to try to match that program a little bit better with the what is turning out to be the length of this pandemic.
Yeah.
or impact by COVID. So I think there's some Montana business. I know there are because they've contacted me. And we want to make sure we get that word out to everybody that, hey, if you need more EIDL funds, it's a good, you know, it's time to apply for those. I also think businesses also need to remember it is a loan. So
yes.
even though the payment, you know, the loan amount's gone up or the payment's deferred for a while, at some point you got to pay it back.
Well, I want to cut you off there just briefly because we got to take a break. And I want to come on back and then talk about that aspect of this because I know the PPP program, it turns into a grant program, but as you mentioned, you know, I want to figure out more of those terms for the EIDL, and there's other applications open. You were saying the SVOG, you'll have to explain what that is, because this is what this is about, getting up to speed on the business end of pandemic relief. Brent Donnelly is with us, Montana District Director for the SBA, the Small Business Administration. We'll take a break and we'll come on back. It is From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Tomorrow, I think we've got some open phones. Thursday, another edition of Voices EDU as the newly appointed Chancellor of Montana State University Billings, Dr. Stephanie Hickswaugh, is going to join us to talk about the continuing vision there for MSUB. And she's actually the first woman to hold that position since the university was founded in 1927. So maybe a little bit on breaking that glass ceiling. Brent Donnelly is with us, Montana's District Director for the SBA, as we kind of get caught up to speed here on the business end of this of relief funds, the latest package here. And Brent, thank you again for being here. I just got to open it up to a couple of things I think we need to hit that are directed towards some of the businesses in Montana that were most impacted by the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, I mean, at this point, I don't think you can say any business wasn't impacted, but there certainly was a group that's impacted perhaps a little bit more than others. And so one of those particular group is eligible for grant funds. There's $16.2 billion in grant funds for a program called the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant. And so this would be for businesses that were like have performing arts organizations, movie theaters, zoos, museums, things like that. And so this grant program opens up for applications on April the 8th. And I think that there's a huge amount of information up on the SBA website, including the application portal is up, even though you can't apply till the 8th. If you're a business, one of these types of businesses, you just want to go to the SBA.gov website and find the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant Program. It'll give you all the application checklists, the documentation requirements, the eligibility requirements, and pages upon pages of guidance and frequently asked questions and that up there for SVOG. And check that out. Because that group of businesses was, you know, either completely closed or nearly completely closed for some period of time last year. And this is to help them out. And then finally, I want to make mention, the guidance isn't up yet, but in the most recent package, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund program, $28.6 billion for the restaurant industry.
Wow.
Also a group that was hard hit with the COVID pandemic, with restrictions and closures and different things, capacity limitations and that. And so watch for that as information comes up, because I think that will have an impact here on our Montana businesses and communities, because there are restaurants in this state. We talked about this before, Tom. We're such a rural state, and these types of businesses not only are, you know, provide employment, but they provide kind of a community aspect as well.
Leave us with really that one last thought, Brent.
Hey, if you're a business that haven't looked at these programs, look at them. If you've looked at them before and didn't qualify, look at them again, because the rules have changed, and check it out. Thanks, Tom.
Good advice. Good stuff. Brent, thank you for the work you do, too. Appreciate that. And we'll be catching up with you again. I know we will. Stay safe. Okay, Brent?
Yeah, anytime. Thank you.
All right. My thanks to Eric Young, our most excellent in-studio, in training engineer. I'm Tom Schultz. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.